Accession number 30274, Reel 1.
Mr. Wainwright, Reel 3. Did you feel that war was coming in the late 30s?
Oh, everything was a bit of a tangle, and Chamberlain's speech and all the rest of it. And then, of course, they knew that the war had been declared, and then there was a situation where I knew I was waiting to be called up, and I had said to my wife, well, I hope I don't get put into one of those great big tin cans, meaning a tank. And of course I was drafted straight away into the 47th Royal Tank Regiment, and on the 4th of August we went down to Farnley Park, Otley. And that was a tented camp on the side of the wharf. And there we started with all the physical training and all the change of life onto army life. And then came Dunkirk, and all we had were a few small tanks from the First World War, and on those we were training up on the Yorkshire Moors. Cutting a story short, we eventually got tanks which were three-man tanks called Valentines, which had been made at Armstrong's on the Tyne. They had a tiny gun, a 22mm gun. They had a driver, an operator, and a tank commander. And the engine was a bus diesel engine. Weird little tanks.
Just before we come on to your training and what you did in your tanks, can you remember where you were when war was actually declared and what you were doing at the time?
Oh, I'm just in Newcastle. I have no particular recollection.
How did you feel at the time when you heard the news?
What?
How did you feel at the time when you heard the news that war was...
I haven't the remotest idea. The only thing I can tell you factually is that after my wife and family had evacuated to Keswick, my parents very kindly came from Cavendish Place to our house in Beattie Avenue and lived there to keep me going. The evening we were sitting playing cards, and Sir John Simon, who was the Chancellor of the Exchequer, announced that cigarettes were going to be taxed, and the price of 10 players would be 9 pence instead of 6 pence. Whereupon I said, right, I will stop smoking. And I had the remains of a packet of 10 players in my pocket, and it stayed there. I never smoked another one. I didn't smoke again until we were stranded in a troop ship, the engine of which had gone wrong in the middle of the Atlantic. There was nothing left in the nappy, and there was hardly any food at all. The only thing they had was C2C cigarettes, and I started smoking again. As regards the outbreak of war, or anything that happened before I went into the army, that's the only incident that I can think of. The rest meant nothing to me.
How did you find out that you were to be enlisted in the army?
Well, I just went through the procedures that were laid down. People had to go and be examined, and then told to wait until you were called up, and then just did that, wait until I was called up. Had it arranged with the firm. They knew what the situation was. They had said what they would do about wages. And I just sat and waited. So I can't give you any ideas about it whatsoever. I haven't any.
So you realised that you would be called up?
Oh, yes, and you would be called up, just waiting for it to happen. And then, of course, I was called up into what I had said I hoped I wouldn't have to go into.
Did you get a choice, then?
No, I just simply accepted what I was told to do.
So you were, in fact, told you were going into the tank regiment?
I was called up, yes. Told where to report, central station, particular train, and off we went. Finished up in army lorries going from whatever station it was, I don't remember the station, to Farnley Park, Otley, which stands there today. I've driven past it many times, going over from Harrogate over Bloverhouses Moor to Clitheroe, where I have friends now.
How did your wife feel about you joining the army?
Well, I think you could answer that as well as I could. Tremendously upset, but accepting the fact, as one did in those days, that there was duty to be done and you got on with it. And she and her mother and Alison, who was 4 years and 4 months old, and Pamela, who was 4 months old, the four of them went to Eskin Street in Keswick, and eventually found a house where they could stay. Mrs. Barr, they stayed with. I can't tell you what her feelings were. I mean, she was a normal woman. What would you expect me to say?
Did you think that the war would last a long time at that particular time? Any feelings of this? Anticipation of what was going to happen?
No recollection whatsoever. I suppose we felt like most other people, just hopeful that it wouldn't last very long, but nobody had any real idea of what would happen. I don't have any recollection of particular feelings.
Do you recall having was there a medical examination before you?
Oh, yes. Yes, I was past A1.
And that was prior to you actually turning up at Offaly?
No. You see, you were called up by age group, and then you were examined, and then they decided whether you would be suitable. And if you were A1, your name went on the list, and then when it came round to the necessity of calling people up, just pull your name off the list. I was 30, and just came up on the rotor, and that was me called up. I went and did what I was told to do. But as regards emotions, I was just like everybody else. It was there. It was something to be done, and you got on with it, much as you hated it.
Do you recall how you were received at this first army camp?
Well, just a herd of people. There was one chap, or two chaps perhaps, that I knew in the same group, Newcastle fellows. Two who, like me, had been in the food trade, and we were just a lump of people, and we were dumped at this camp, and we had to go through this procedure and that procedure to draw our kit, and we had to get something to sleep on. We were bell tents, and as far as I remember, there were six people per tent. Fortunately, the weather was fine, and we didn't do too badly, but they were. One day you were living a normal civilian life, and the next day you were just one of a number, putting up with whatever you had to put up with, in a tent and going parading, getting something to eat. Totally shattering life. It's quite different from anything he'd ever done before.
Yes, it must have been a total upheaval for you, was it?
Well, it's so obvious that it was a total upheaval that you needn't even make the remark. I mean, life is shattered and has to be rebuilt in a totally different way. And one of the things about it is getting on with unknown people with whom you are destined to live and put up with whatever they're like. I mean, you didn't know whether they were decent folk or whether they were indecent folk. He just simply had to get on with and find out what they were like.
Do you recall that first time? You said it was a tented camp and you were all in tented accommodation.
Yes.
Were there any other buildings apart?
No, we were in meadows on the side of the River Wharf, and we were visited periodically by a German plane that used to fly up. And fortunately, when it dropped its bombs, the bombs landed on the other side of the wharf from where our tents were, but it was as close as that. And we learnt about wearing army clothes, moving about in army boots, eating army food, keeping army hours, being up at 6 a.m. for early parades, reveille, 6 a.m, and having to live as best you could in the circumstances you were in. You were grafted on to a set of people who were mainly territorials with a few professionals, and gradually you got your kit issued and your rifles, and then you learned how to fire a rifle, and then you learned how to do something with a tank. But as I say, there was no proper tank equipment for a long time.
Was it all tank people at that particular camp?
Yes, there was a whole regiment. There were three regiments, you see, 41, 45 and 47. And three regiments made up a group. And they were all territorials. The 47th was originated in Oldham. And the other two were originated in two other centres, which I have forgotten. But the chaps who were the territorials, they knew a certain amount about army things, as territorials would, but otherwise the rest of us were completely raw.
How long were you at that camp?
Don't know, couldn't tell you. We were in many, many places after that. One of the places that we went to from there and stayed the winter, as far as our particular lot was concerned, was Ornham's Hall, which is a farm on the side of the Old North Road, a mile south of Borough Bridge. It's still there, I've driven past it. The regiment as such was based on Borough Bridge and was round about it. But we spent the winter, we being my particular troop, in a barn in the farmyard. The low part of the barn was where the cows had been. It was cobbled, and there were stands for two cows partitioned. And up above, a wooden floor, That's where the hay had been. And there were great big double doors on one side of the building, so that to the bottom the cows could come in, the top the hay could come in and out. And in the top they'd put two round iron stoves with chimneys which were let out through the roof. That was a total heating. The beds were wooden frames, double deckers. The mattresses were canvas bags full of chaff. The pillows were canvas tubes full of chaff. He had two blankets, and that's all that he had. And he had all your equipment on your own part of your bunk bed, and that was your existence. And we had to cross the farmyard, whatever the weather, to get to the main house for eating. And there wasn't very much.
What sort of things did you have to eat? What were the meals like?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. It was just grub. But it was a very bad winter. There was a lot of snow and a lot of ice. And through it all, we had to take the tanks out on training. That was when we had Valentine's. And we had an awful lot of trouble, because the worse the weather, the greater the tendency for the tracks to break. And trying to mend tracks in mud and snow was very, very difficult. It's no good me trying to tell you in words, because whatever I say, you would have not the slightest conception of what it's like to fight these circumstances. You've never been inside a tank, and you have no notion of what that means as part of your life. And you've never slept in a barn. You have no notion what that means. You've never been in the circumstance that you don't matter, that the whole of life goes on and you're just in the machine and that's it. I know you're a policeman. I know you're subject to discipline. I know you've got bosses. And I know they tell you and go and do things you'd sooner not do. But it's nothing compared to being completely lifted out of your life and having no life of any sort comparable to what you've been used to. You just can't understand it. Then from Ornham's Hall, we went south to Chiddingfold. And we were at Shoreham, which was along the coast west of Brighton. And we were up on the Downs training, Chanctonbury Ring, Lancing Ring. And in the winter, it was jolly cold there too. And gradually, our skill with the tanks improved, as you might hope it would. Then we went up to the peninsula near Swansea. What they call the peninsula there, where we calibrated our guns, and then again we were calibrating our guns up on that stretch of coast west of Carlisle. What do they call that? The stretch of water that goes west from Carlisle.
You obviously moved around quite a lot in this initial period.
Oh, yes, we trained all over the place.
Did you do any initial basic army training when you first were called up? Did you do any initial basic army training?
Yes, I do. I had to get used to all the things, the army uniform, the army boots, the army rifle, and the army drill, the marching and all the rest of it.
And that
was what anybody would have, and then you got on to the tank side of it.
Where was that first carried out, when you were introduced to the tanks?
Well, the first bit of training we had was when we were on the moors in Yorkshire, but there were just a few odd tanks left over virtually from the First World War. We didn't have any proper equipment, we just were learning very basic things about tanks, and then gradually, I can't remember where we were when we got the first Valentines.
What was your particular role? What was your job?
Well, I was originally a tank driver. And then I became tank commander. And I was a tank commander long before Alamein, so I was really tank commander all the way through all the operational stuff. It's very difficult to go back to details like what did you eat and so on. I don't have any recollection particularly. It was food and you were glad to have any food and that was it. But there's so much that I could tell you which really wouldn't be relevant that you wouldn't want to know.
Can you remember what the training with the tanks, what did that, how did that happen? What sort of things were you doing?
Well, there were basically two sides to it. One was the physical management of the tank from the point of view of the engine and the driving, in other words, the steering, and getting to know how to maneuver a tank, which was not a vehicle on wheels, but which was a vehicle on tracks. And you had to get to know how to maneuver your steering levers, one for the right track and one for the left track, to make the tank do what you wanted to. And you had to know the limits of what you could do so that you didn't destroy the tank or anything that was near the tank. You had to learn that. Then you had to learn about the big gun, whatever the big gun might be. It wasn't a very big one in the first tanks, but it was later on. And then you had the machine gun. And then you had two radio sets. And you had to communicate with the people in the tank through your own mouthpiece and their earphones. And all this had to be learned. And then, when it became a question of being operational, you then had to learn how to live in the tank and round about the tank and sleep in the tank and feed round the tank. And it gradually was something that you learned about. But you couldn't say that at any particular point you learned this or you learned that. And then, from the point of view of the people in command and the people like myself, tank commander, you had to learn about all the map reading. Well, I already knew about map reading and I had to apply what I already knew. But living in a tank as the basis of your life. The restriction of the tiny space that you're in, the restriction of always having earphones on and always listening to what's going on, the restriction of an engine, and you know what a diesel engine is like, pounding away all the time, and all these things, you can't describe it.
How long did this training go on for?
I don't remember exactly the different stages. The only way you could find that out would be I'd have to apply to the records office to tell me where I had been at a given time, because I don't know. I don't even remember when I was discharged. I know it was 4 years plus, but I can't remember precisely when. But the whole way of life is something that I can't convey to you, because I know that you haven't got within your capacity the experience that would make it meaningful to you.
Did you get any leave during this period?
Did what?
Any leave?
Oh, I had some intermittent leave, yes.
Did you have any kind of social life then within the army? Was there any time off? Do you recall anything?
When we were at Shoreham, one of our chaps very cleverly maneuvered things so that he had a car down there, and we could get from Shoreham along to Brighton, where there were various hotels, and this particular chap and one or two others were potentially heavy drinkers, which I was not. And also they had money, which I had not. And they managed to get quite a bit of time along in Brighton under pubs. And on one occasion, when I had been out all day up on the downs and had nothing to eat, I was able to go with them in this car to Brighton. And we met people that we had known before, and they had gone somewhere else. And there was a drinking session. And on an empty stomach, I drank beer. And for the first time in my life, I got drunk. And I was taken back in this car, not knowing it, and got into my billet in Shoreham, and having been drunk that once, I vowed I would never be drunk again. I never have. Terrible experience. That's all, by the way, and it's not sensible history at all, but it happened.